Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up next hour, we're convening a gathering of African-American law enforcement professionals, most of whom are actively in law enforcement, but not all. Some are former law enforcement officers. We'll hear what they say about the culture of law enforcement, some of the challenges they've experienced within their own departments, as well as challenges they've experienced in policing African-American communities as a black police officer. That coming up on Air Talk next hour here on 89.3. But speaking of policing, joining us as he does regularly, the chief of the Los Angeles Police Department, Michael Moore. Chief Moore, thank you for being with us again.
Good morning, Larry.
Let's talk first of all about the ongoing criticism that you've been receiving from activists critical of policing in Los Angeles who want to see you step down as chief of police. They're critical of officer response to the George Floyd protests in Los Angeles, critical of departmental practices when it comes to the gang database that LAPD provides information to, and they say it's time for you to go. Your response to that call to resign?
Well, policing in America has never been more challenged, and I recognize as the chief of police that that focus is on the person at the top. So it's not a position I'm unaccustomed to being in, and being in this position today, I believe I'm the best person for this time. I think that my experience, my record of reform, my record of supporting the men and women of this organization, while at the same time challenging us to continue to evolve, to continue to show that our efforts in each of our communities is one built on building trust, and to show that we are the 21st century police department and that we're a leader in law enforcement and the path forward, I believe we can see further reforms and further changes. So I hear the criticism. I'm reflective of it. I look each day at my work and the efforts from which I can improve my performance. I'm not a person without mistake, and I believe that you need to be strong and confident, but I'm also, my effort is to avoid an arrogance or an effort of arguing or getting in debates with individuals that have yet to see leadership or a policing that they believe is acceptable in America today.
Let's talk about the response to the protests, and we've spoken about this before, but you've had additional time to reflect on this. I know there have been investigations of officer conduct involving use of batons, use of hard foam projectiles to control or disperse crowds. And my question is, in hindsight, as you look back on it, what, if any, methods would you have changed, anything you'd do differently if you were responding to the series of events now with the knowledge you've gained since?
Well, first of all, the reports and the investigations into this period of time, both the events leading up to, during the protests themselves and the aftermath, those reports are very much in their infancy. We have ongoing investigations involving allegations against officers who used excessive or unnecessary force. Those investigations have not been brought back before me. I do check in each week on the status of those. It's still too early for me to assess what went right, what went wrong. I'm encouraged by the recent action by the City Council, which authorized the independent study. It's going to be led by Mr. Jerry Chaliff, former member of this department and former president of the Police Commission, and a well-known civil rights attorney, if you will, and his independence, I believe, and his efforts of digging in to the circumstances, I look forward to hearing from him and reviewing his results. Those results are going to take some months, and simultaneously, the Board of Police Commissioners, under the leadership of Commission President Eileen Decker, has arranged and is organizing a independent study as well, and that study will be a direct report back to the Board of Police Commissioners, not through me. And its findings and its what it identifies as strengths, weaknesses, and changes that need to occur going forward. I'll not jump ahead of those and determine anything. I think we have to get the facts, we have to get all the information, and be thoughtful about how we move forward.
Understandable that this takes time. In the months, though, that it's going to take for those reports to be compiled, if there are other heated protests that take place and confrontations between your officers and protesters, are there any different sorts of directions, any different sort of leadership you would provide without having that final report in hand?
What I'm encouraged by is that in the definition of the protest period, if we just to take that week or 10-day period, that the instances of the department having to escalate in response to violence and in regards to violence against officers, violence against the community, whether it be fires or looting or other types of unlawful actions, those have been on the minimal side, have been the fewer numbers, both during the initial days. We saw, of course, a surge in that violent activity, and we responded in accordance to our efforts to regain control, protect our officers, protect other members, including protesters within these demonstrations, as well as to protect the business community and those that were in the communities in which these demonstrations occurred. But what has not been spoken about very often is that there were countless other demonstrations during that period and since. Each day across Los Angeles, we've had continued protest activities, demonstrations both in the downtown area as well as other parts of the city. I get a broadcast each morning of what the planned are demonstrations, and we have daily demonstrations that are occurring as we speak now that are happening without any type of violence, without any type of attacks or against officers or others, without any type of damage to the surrounding neighborhood. So I think what Los Angeles can count on is that a police department, a police force that will make every effort to facilitate demonstrations to ensure that people's First Amendment rights are protected, as well as to protect the surrounding community from those who may want to take that demonstration and capitalize on it or hijack it by committing acts of violence or looting or fires into a neighborhood. But again, I'm thankful that in the weeks and months since, the month plus and weeks since, these the demonstrations that really were heightened as far as the level of violence in the last few days of May and the first day or so of June, that those are largely behind us. Unlike other parts of the country, we're seeing demonstrations today that are frequent, regular, and our officers are working effectively with the organizers or those that are present in the demonstrations and facilitating lawful marches and presence of protests without having to resort to any type of force.
We're talking with LAPD Chief Michael Moore on Air Talk. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like during the most intense periods of the protests over largely a three-day period, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that there were significant problems when a declaration of unlawful assembly was made and an order for people to disperse. Protesters didn't disperse, or at least not entirely disperse. And then you had the confrontation between officers and the protesters who didn't go. Are there other tactics that officers who were there on that front of the line with protesters could employ to deal with that so things don't escalate?
So that is our continued effort in each engagement, is how do we ensure communications? How do we do everything possible to facilitate a demonstration? And then once a situation unfortunately devolves into acts of violence, into acts of whether it be property damage or attack on officers or others, and now we have an unlawful assembly and we need to disperse that group and or make arrests, how do we do so with the least amount of force and gain the greatest amount of cooperation from everyone present there? That calculus is something that's employed every single day by every incident commander, by every supervisor and officer on those lines. And that's my expectation that is happening today, it happens tomorrow, and it happens in the way future. There are instances, unfortunately, that we've seen not only here in Los Angeles but across the country, where the best efforts by the police department, by the best efforts by those officers, are met with violence, they're met with aggression, and that in those instances, officers have to be able to defend themselves. I will absolutely back our officers that they have the right to defend themselves from physical attack, and they also have the authority that in instances once an unlawful assembly is declared, for to make arrests
and to physically make arrests of individuals who refuse to leave an area. And in doing so, if then officers are met with resistance by punches and kicks and strikes or items being thrown at them, officers are, again, are going to use a proportional amount of force. They expect us to use a minimal amount of force in all instances to protect ourselves, but also to effect those arrests. And lastly, there are instances in which we saw in those 3 days when our efforts to arrest were overwhelmed by the level of violence within the crowd. And in those instances, the decision and going forward, the decision of making an arrest when you have an unlawful assembly with, say, thousands of individuals that refuse to leave an area, is our ability to make those arrests versus our need to disperse that crowd to ensure that we restore order and protect the businesses and residences and others that are present in that area from harm.
Are you going to be able or your team go through and look at all these videos that have come in from the public as well as body-worn cameras and be able to determine what the precipitating incidents were that led to the physical confrontation? Are you able to get enough of a context to understand whether the use of force is justified? And I raise that because in some of the images that we've seen, the Los Angeles Times distributed and shown, the appearance on the video is that there isn't instigation on the part of people in the crowd of protesters for what we see officers using. Now, there might have been, you know, things thrown at him before. We don't necessarily know, but is there enough there to piece together a more comprehensive picture of what happened and who might have overreacted?
So, Larry, it sounds like you're sitting in the conferences that I have with my investigators. That's exactly what we're pursuing. That's why this is taking as much time as it's taking. We're gathering up tens of thousands of hours of video, of imagery, not just from body-worn cameras, but from CCTV, from news footages. And I have already seen instances in which what has been positioned on the news is an isolated clip. And there's other angles and other bits of information, significant aspects of information that give a broader context to the facts of what occurred there. But again, I'm not passing judgment. I want to wait until in each of these instances, what I assure the public as well as the men and women of this organization is that when an officer resorts to using force, what are the facts and circumstances that he or she was faced with? And what was their and how did they de-escalate if possible and use tactics to avoid having to resort to force? And then what direction also were they given? And as that sequence of events where it was then executed or took place, and my evaluation will be, was it consistent with our policy? Was it lawful? Was it the right thing to do at that moment? And in that calculus, if it amounted to misconduct, to call that out, if they amounted to poor supervision or poor command and control, to call that out, but also then to defend instances in which the officer's actions were reasonable, the efforts by the supervision and command and control at the location was balanced in the sense of balancing the competing needs of those that were demonstrated the injury or damage that they were causing. And that information will come out in the time ahead, as well as having the independence of two independent studies that will also have access to the same information.
Okay.
And make their own independent assessment.
Well, and as you well know, the LA Police Protective League, the union, has been critical of you, saying you really haven't highlighted enough the threats that were made to officers and what they were dealing with in the streets. And they have voiced that they felt you should have provided more defense for what officers went through.
Well, I've spoken with rank and file. I've met with them a number of times throughout the city. And I've also made a number of public statements, particularly during the 3 days where you called out the highest level of violence. I spoke about the officers that were in Pershing Square where their vehicle was surrounded in their efforts to leave that area. That Sunday, I think the event occurred on a Saturday, and I spoke out in support of what I saw right there. Very publicly, that I believe that the efforts of those officers at that point was justified. Now, I have to get more information to make the final determination, but my efforts in supporting the rank and file is to defend them when I have the basis to, and that's the vast majority of time. But also, I have an obligation to them, as well as the public in which I serve, and I serve all these parties, is to ensure that I don't overstate and make representations without the facts. And so it takes, I know many people would like to have this judged, including the, and our officers. I know that they want to have a chief, and I want to be that chief that they feel supports them. But my credibility also depends that that support is based on facts and information and not on emotions. Right. I believe in our people. I believe that the work they do every day is critical to the success of the safety of this city. And I know their valor, and I know their sacrifice. And yet, at the same time, I also know that we can fall short. And in doing this this job, it's not a matter of being popular with the public or with the rank and file. It's about being honest, forthright, and direct.
We'll continue our conversation with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. We'll also take your questions at 866-893-KPCC. You can tweet at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page at kpcc.org. We'll continue in 1 minute. LAPD Chief Michael Moore with us. Then coming up next hour on Air Talk, we speak with several African-American law enforcement professionals who talk about their experiences within their departments and with serving their communities. That's coming up second hour Air Talk right here on KPCC. Now we're speaking with LAPD Chief Michael Moore, and we're taking your calls at 866-893-KPCC. Back to the one tweets at AirTalk, when does Chief Moore believe the reports that he says are in their infancy be available to the public? We hear these investigations are in process, but we rarely hear the results. Chief Moore?
So currently we have more than 40 personnel investigators assigned to conduct the personnel complaints involving excessive or unnecessary force. We additionally have robbery homicide investigators that are investigating crimes of violence that committed against officers, the attacks on officers, as well as the fires and looting, the arsons that occurred. Both those are ongoing. And regarding the independent studies that are going to be done by the Board of Police Commissioners, as well as by the City Council, I would expect that those will likely take, it would probably take to the end of this year would be my projection. The commitment here is to be methodical, to gather and capture everything. We will provide all information that's requested by both of these independent groups that conduct their own analysis of our work, as well as the outcome. But this will be brought back for the public, but it will take time. I'm asking for everyone's patience on that.
Will video that the investigators review be publicly available at the end of this?
I think that it's appropriate in this instance for us to provide at least a portion of that video. I do believe that the public needs to see a broader context. What's been published in the media accounts at times is slighted or maybe slanted one way or biased in one fashion or another. And particularly when there's areas of a great deal of public interest, I believe it serves the public's purpose to release it, and I'll be pursuing that path.
All right. Let me ask you about also the way that protesters were detained at some of the protests where they were put onto buses. There weren't face coverings. Officers also didn't have their faces covered. There were concerns with them sitting for hours, potentially exposing the coronavirus to each other. Has there been a review of that to determine if there is a better way of handling mass arrests like that, or taking into custody if they're not technically arrests? And also, are you urging officers or enforcing with officers that they do wear facial coverings?
So let's start with the last part. Yes, it's an order I issued some time ago that all officers are to wear face coverings, all personnel, anytime in a public setting, as well as in our offices here in headquarters, as well as stations across the city. This COVID pandemic is only increasing exponentially across all of our communities, and LAPD has not been immune from that. So the health and safety of individuals as well as their families at home is of critical importance to me. So we are not just encouraging, it's been a direction, it's an order, we are enforcing it, as well as we're relying upon the peer pressure, the partner safety of protecting not only yourself, but protect your partner, because you may be an individual who's asymptomatic and not aware that you have this. We're doing an outgrowth of testing with, we make testing available for all of our personnel. In regards to the academy and other sites where we have training scenarios that bring people into closer proximity, we're doing regular or weekly testing to ensure that we can identify early any
okay.
come down with this COVID-19. As to the custody and the transportation of arrestees, whether it be for curfew or other offenses during the civil unrest, that will be part of our broader analysis. That will be a particular area that the independent studies will look at. And as far as internally goes, that will be information that we're also gathering. But let me also comment that I've heard a number of accounts of officers not wearing masks. So I also am aware of a number of accounts where officers were wearing masks and face coverings. Same with protesters. I've seen tens of thousands of protesters, many of them unmasked, frequently within inches of an officer, and expressing themselves. And I've also seen protesters with masks. Those that were arrested that had masks, certainly those masks were not taken from them. Those that were without masks, if we had the ability to provide masks, we did so. We will look at and understand whether how pervasive that was. And I've heard reports of people saying that they were entered onto a bus and they were not provided a mask, and they were caused to sit in close proximity to someone for hours. I regret that the circumstances were such that people were caused to be detained for long periods of time while we processed their arrest. And certainly we'll do everything we can within what we practically can do. When you look at the number of individuals who refuse to leave areas, who refuse to comply with curfew, who were involved in unlawful acts, and we took efforts to bring them into custody to stop violence, to stop property damage, and to restore order into our communities.
All right.
It's not a perfect scenario, and one that we'll study and look at closely. This pandemic, however, is unique. And to all of law enforcement and our experience of taking personal protective efforts. We do that every day in our work, but certainly a pandemic has added a whole nother level of complexity to that challenge.
Well, and you can't force all protesters to mask, but you certainly have the leverage with your officers. And is that something that you are enforcing, that they all need to wear face coverings?
Yes, we are enforcing that, and it's being enforced today. And we also recognize that there are instances when an officer might be in a foot pursuit, the officer may be in a critical time in which he or she needs to provide communications over a radio system, in which a mask covering muffles or interferes with that. I have that happen. I'm sitting here talking to you on a phone right now without a mask on.
Sure.
If I were to wear a mask, the value or the quality of my ability for you to understand what I'm trying to convey would be impacted. That is many more fold the case when an officer is trying to communicate in a crowd control or a violent or turbulent situation, and he or she's trying to talk on a radio to coordinate and get assistance or help and to help resolve a situation. But again, those are emergency situations. The day-to-day actions of an officer moving about the city, an officer working at a desk or in an office place, the expectation today and the enforcement is that they wear those masks.
Okay.
During that time, it's for their protection as well as the public, as well as their workmates.
Well, and it models as well as a public entity representing the public what the expectation is for safer practices. We'll be back with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. Back in 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. Coming up in our second hour of Air Talk, the future of the Tournament of Roses big events, the Rose Parade. Is it going to be held January 1st, 2021? What about the big game, the Rose Bowl, on that same day? We hope to get some clarity coming up. Second hour, Air Talk here on KPCC. LAPD Chief Michael Moore joining us right now. Maurice asks on Facebook, have there been any arrests of looters? I would think with so many cameras around these days, that should lead to some evidence of who was responsible. Chief?
Oh, absolutely. I believe I reported on the Monday of the initial week of protests that from the night before, 70 individuals had been arrested for acts of looting. And so the overall numbers I don't have at my fingertips, but we've reported it earlier. There were efforts and not just efforts, but results in identifying those that were committing looting and preying upon businesses across the city.
All right. Wanted to ask you also about the LA Times analysis of calls coming into the LAPD since 2010. The Times reporting team, Joel Rubin, Ben Poston, found fewer than 8% were reports of violent crimes, which the Times defined as homicides, assaults with deadly weapons, robberies, batteries, shots fired, and rape. And the analysis found there were many more traffic accident responses and calls recorded as minor disturbances. So the implication in the analysis is that it's a small percentage, less than 10% of the calls that come in, that would potentially require armed uniformed police officers to respond. Your thoughts of that analysis?
Well, the analysis had a number of flaws to it, including that half of the accounts of what they called a call for service was actually an officer-initiated activity. So you have to, first of all, you take the analysis, and it's about a million calls for service a year is what the LAPD actually responds to each year. By the way, we have about 3 to 4 million calls into 911. People believe they have an emergency, and we siphon it down, and we whittle that down to about 1 million times a year that we'll actually assign that as a routine or urgent or emergency call. And the Times is correct. A smaller percentage of those, perhaps 2 out of 10, are actually
violent crimes or something that would mean an immediate law enforcement response that could require the use of their emergency powers of arrest, as well as the fact that there's violence involved, which may necessitate an officer to defend themselves or defend someone else from a person's attack. So there's a couple aspects here. First and foremost, the Los Angeles Police Department and Fire Department and our public safety responds to public service. And I look forward to the conversation today that is saying that we're being asked to do too much, because I fully agree with that. We're being asked to handle far too many calls that are not truly a law enforcement-related responsibility, but law enforcement's been tasked with it, where that deals with people experiencing homelessness, people experiencing some type of mental health crisis. There's just countless times in which minor matters that really are not law enforcement dependent are something that we're the agency of last resort, because social services programming doesn't exist for someone else to respond. I look forward. I'm working currently with on a steering committee with Dr. Sharon from Department of Mental Health, as well as Dr. Ross from the California Endowment, to identify for the Board of Supervisors an alternative to that. There has been on the City Council and supported by the mayor the establishment of an alternate department that would take tens of thousands of calls. We responded to 70,000 reported traffic collisions last year. And the vast majority of them do not involve serious injury or death. And why that's a requirement for law enforcement to handle that? Is it really a necessary part of our work? I look forward to realigning those responsibilities and shifting them.
Is it possible that then 80% of what are typical police responses could be done by civilian personnel, people that respond to traffic accidents, and that's their thing, people who respond to individuals reporting suicidal threats, people that respond to domestic disputes. Is it possible to come up with a core of specialized groups other than law enforcement officers, and that the job of police would be cut back to just a fraction of what it is?
So I think that's some people who have that theory in their mind, and I look forward to sitting at a round table with shared responsibility of public safety that says, how can we shift resources safely to other disciplines that can protect victims from further harm, that can ensure that people are not allowed to pray or promote violence against others. And that's critical. You have a traffic collision, for example, that doesn't involve someone driving under the influence, doesn't involve a crime. It can that be investigated by a Department of Transportation officer? But I'm also concerned, for instance,
quickly, yeah,
domestic violence, that you have victims that they not be further victimized because of a lack of a law enforcement presence.
All right, Chief Moore, as always, we appreciate it very much. Look forward to talking with you again soon. LAPD Chief Michael Moore on Air Talk.